pop culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. But can it remain a great nation if we are plunging recklessly and irretrievably in the direction of civil war? There are so many books, articles, predictions, especially over this voting rights issue. Is this the issue that could do it, since we can't decide in behalf of the Democrats' radical voting rights so-called reform, which basically takes all power away from states when it comes to framing their own elections? It totally destroys that aspect of the Constitution, and it doesn't deserve to pass, and it won't pass. And the Democrats are getting together later this afternoon. Apparently it's a big behind-closed-doors meeting in which they're all going to gang up on Kirsten and Joe, Manchin and Sinema, and they're going to try to let them know that people are going to die if they don't pass the voting rights bills, both the Freedom to Vote Act and the so-called John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Now, why do I say people are going to die? There are people on a hunger strike. Yeah, and then people die of hunger strikes. It happens. And again, this is really a remarkable moment. There are about 24 activists who are on the hunger strike for voting rights who are sitting. And of course, what do you do if you're on a hunger strike? You sit and you sing on the steps of the U.S. Capitol. It sounded a little bit like this earlier today. This is clip 3.
Enough.
I'm gonna let no filibuster turn me around. I'm gonna keep on talking about till I get to freedom land. Keeping on talking, that was the old traditional idea of a filibuster, when it used to be you actually did just keep on talking. Freedom land? It is, if somebody wants to explain what great freedom that has been denied to people for years and years and years is going to be awarded to them by either of these pieces of legislation, you can do it. It's extremely tough, but try it. Try to explain what is the freedom land aspect of this thing. The difficulty here is that this goes along with all of the talk about civil war. And some of it, they're saying there won't be a civil war. There'll just be a breakup of the U.S. That, no, we didn't do it in 1861 when 11 southern states actually seceded from the Union. This time it won't be states. It will just be individual groups, say some of the experts. We may be speaking to one of them, a very serious historian at Yale named Timothy Snyder, who has written, along with so many other people, that we have all the signs of an impending civil war. There are apparently 300 different militia groups, many on the right, some on the left. People who gather in armed groups and are ready. Honestly, is it appropriate to think about using violence to try to alter the voting regulations, or to prevent any alteration in the voting regulations in a handful of states? This is madness right now. And it clearly isn't good for the country. It's also not good for the Democrats. How do we know it's not good for the Democrats? A Gallup poll. A Gallup poll just showed a record switch. Now, again, it's not a permanent switch. Doesn't mean Republicans win everything. And people get the wrong idea when they think, oh, Republicans have gained 14 points. What has happened here is the Democrats were formerly very well ahead of Republicans. They were beating Republicans. In terms of a preference, who would you like to see win the upcoming congressional elections? Formerly, at the beginning of last year of 2021, there had been an edge for Democrats of 9 points. Now there's an edge for Republican of 5 points. That's a switch. And it's not that Republicans are getting so much more popular. It's that Democrats are getting so much less popular. And I do think some of that has to do with the overstatement of the seriousness of some of the issues that we are dealing with right now. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. The idea that Joe Biden has contributed to all of this with his outrageous speech on voting rights, and the idea that this defines who you are and where you are, and whether you're with Bull Connor or John Lewis, or whether you're with Dr. King or George Wallace. I mean, really? This is just a few words from Chuck Schumer on the voting rights bill. This is clip 9. Listen.
Eyes of the nation will be watching what happens this week in the United States Senate. Just a few days removed from what would have been Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 93rd birthday, the Senate has begun the debate on the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. For the first time in this Congress, Democrats have tried for months to hold a voting rights debate on the floor, but we have been blocked each time by Republicans.
Okay, so we have this deeply meaningful voting rights debate. On the Senate floor, Schumer said this. This is clip 10.
Unfortunately, this is Donald Trump's Republican Party, and it is the one now trying to take away the vote from younger, black and brown, elderly, minority, and low-income voters. And yet every time we try to engage our Senate Republican colleagues, they resisted. So we have no choice. We are moving ahead on our own. Once again, no one denies the path ahead is an uphill struggle. Republicans have been clear they will entertain no bipartisan compromise on voting rights. But long odds are no excuse for this chamber to avoid this important issue. Again, members of this chamber were elected to debate and to vote. We're going to vote. We're all going to go on the record. And Republicans will have to choose which side they stand on, protecting democracy or offering their implicit endorsement of Donald Trump's big lie.
Okay, clearly they have the idea that that's a way they can turn these election sentiments around. We will get to that question of why things have turned around in a Republican direction. And by the way, apparently it's come back and it's more even toward the end of the year, but Republicans are still ahead, and they're usually not. Usually in the Gallup poll with personal preference. What does it really show, though? It shows the overwhelming plurality of voters in America say they are independents, not Republicans or Democrats. I think there are a lot of people in the country who are kind of fed up with both parties. Increasing numbers of Republicans. There was a secret meeting, apparently, but it's been confirmed by all the sources who participated. 30 different prominent Trump office holders, people who are part of his cabinet, who are now meeting in an effort to try to organize to block Trump's return. We'll tell you about that and much more. Talk with John Fund about the truth about voting fraud and more coming up. On the Michael Medved Show, we'll keep updating you on the hunger strike, whether the hunger strikers on the Freedom to Vote Act and on the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, whether those two acts leading us to Freedom Land are going to actually be passed or advance in the Senate of the United States. They've already passed the House, but whether they are going to advance in the Senate of the United States and face what? A presidential veto? No, no chance. What they might well face is serious problems in the Supreme Court. And that's not because there are race-baiting or hateful or racist or bigoted judges on the Supreme Court. It's because the Constitution of the United States gives the states the right and the responsibility, and each state, according to its own people and its own elected representatives, to determine the rules by which people vote. Now, there are limitations on that because we have a Voting Rights Act, and in fact, that Voting Rights Act has been supplemented and updated and expanded. We have quite an impressive federal voting rights regime to make sure that people are not discriminated against in their accessibility to the ballot based upon race. But there's nothing about that here in any of the complaints that the Freedom to Vote Act is meant to correct. That in the nine states that and the 34 laws in those nine states that have been passed since the election. And many of them, as I think we'll find out when we talk to an expert on voting law all across the country, John Fund, many of those changes were simply efforts to change back the situation from the COVID-19 emergency. And by the way, you could argue that, well, the emergency isn't over. We still have all kinds of challenges, particularly with the continuing problem of the Omicron variant. But we shall see. There is this from Raphael Warnock, the senator from Georgia, one of those two senators just elected. He's not the one who's on the ballot this year. It's his colleague, Raphael Warnock, John Ossoff, who is actually facing. No, actually, that's not true. It is Raphael Warnock who's on the ballot this year. John Ossoff, I think it's 2 years from now. And by the way, Kyrsten Sinema, a lot of people are concerned about her. She is not up for Senate election until 2024. So, no, she's not on the ballot this time in Arizona. Raphael Warnock was on The View, and he went just about as far as you can go in terms of sliming his Republican opponents. Listen to Senator Warnock. It's clip 16.
It's not unusual to have this kind of backlash. You know, when you take two steps forward, often there is pushback driven by fear and bigotry. But the good news is we do have the tools in the Senate to do something about this. We can pass voting rights. Democrats have the slimmest of majorities, but we have the majority nonetheless. Sadly, our colleagues on the other side have chosen power and politics over a commitment to democracy. They are trying to turn democracy on its head so that rather than the people picking their politicians, the politicians are trying to cherry pick their voters. It is anti-democratic. It is anti-American.
Okay, anti-democratic and anti-American? And in what sense? We had the same kind of indictment from Senator Schumer, the majority leader, saying that Republicans are trying to block the franchise, block the exercise of voting, the ability to vote, the freedom to vote. They're trying to block it, he said, from young people, from elderly people, from poor people, from people of color. And again, isn't that an absurdity? I mean, given the fact that many of the states, even with the changes, as in Georgia, there is going to be more mail-in voting. There are less limitations on mail-in voting. There is more early voting in Georgia than in Delaware, the president's home state, or than in New York State, where certainly they haven't prevented Democrats from doing very well and dominating New York State for most of a couple of generations. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. One of the things that is still echoing from yesterday, from the Martin Luther King holiday, is President Biden was actually observed MLK Day, but he faced some renewed ridicule for having once compared Dr. King to George Floyd, which, if you just think about it for a moment, it's a deeply, deeply inappropriate comparison. Here is what President Biden once said in June of 2020 at an economic roundtable. Listen, this is clip 12.
But even Dr. King's assassination did not have the worldwide impact that George Floyd's death did.
Okay. Does that mean that George Floyd changed America more than Dr. King? Is it appropriate to compare a victor, somebody who won in what he aimed for, with somebody who was a victim, and a horrible victim? But you can't say that. Did George Floyd die for a cause? Dr. King did. He knew that he was exposed to all kinds of threats of assassination. And again, this is something we spoke about yesterday. If you look at the 1960s, and the level of violence and the level of anxiety and the level of attacks, yes, including attacks on the Capitol building and attacks on university campuses and protesting students dying, four of them, at Kent State University in Ohio in 1970, in May of 1970. With all of that going on, we didn't have quite the same obsession about civil war. What's different now? We'll get to that. We'll also talk with John Fund about what actually would change if they actually did pass the voting rights reform that Democrats want. We'll get to that and more coming up on the MedVed Show. Michael Medved Show. It is a pleasure to be joined once again by John Fund. John is the National Review's National Affairs reporter. He has also written several books about voting fraud, about honest elections, and about election reform. His most recent book is called Our Broken Elections: How the Left Changed the Way You Vote. And this gets to, I think, one of the hearts of the debate right now. Is there anything in the voting rights integrity bills that were passed in Texas and in Georgia and in a number of other states? 34 different states changed their voting regulations to some extent after the election of last year. But, John, the question really becomes, would any of these changes that are either in on the table from state legislatures or in this legislation that the Democrats have instituted, are any of these really earth-shaking changes?
Well, Actually, most of them are corrections to the emergency regulations that passed when COVID hit in 2020. A bunch of states had health officials and governors issue these changes in the elections that the legislature had never authorized, that had never been in place. And so this is mostly taking it back to the way it was. You know, should a state allow no-excuse absentee voting? Well, if it wants to, it should pass a law. It shouldn't just decree it. Should a state mail ballots to every single person on its voter registration rolls, even though the Pew Research Center says one out of five of our voter registrations are invalid or out of date? The answer is no. You don't want a bunch of ballots floating around that can be picked up by anyone, filled out by anyone, and collected by anyone. So a lot of these are just corrections to going back to where things were in 2020, and if legislatures want to change that further, they can do that.
Now, of course, a Democrat, if one were here arguing with you, would say, why mess with something that was so successful? We had record turnouts, the highest turnout presidential election of eligible voters since 1908, since the William Howard Taft election. So with all those people coming out to vote, why make it more difficult for people to cast ballots?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily making it more difficult because, for example, we expanded early voting in most of these states that just changed their laws. Early voting is a whole lot better than mail-in voting because the ballot is still secret. It's still conducted under the supervision of government employees. You don't have to worry about whether or not the post office will actually deliver your ballot. You know, 3% of the post office's mail first class is either very delayed or never delivered. In a close election, that can make the difference in all the difference in the world. In addition, we don't know if some of those mail-in ballots were mishandled, never delivered, filled out improperly, and early voting is a vastly better measure. In addition, for example, drop boxes aren't necessarily secure unless they have cameras and other things on them. And the drop boxes that were used in 2020 were not secure. In fact, a Wisconsin judge has just ruled that the drop boxes used in Wisconsin were flatly illegal. So we're basically correcting deficiencies in the election. And by the way, just because a lot of people voted doesn't mean that it wasn't chaos at the polls. Ask up in New York State, where it was found they had to fire the boards of the local election boards of two counties because they had such a tsunami of mail-in votes that they hadn't planned for, it didn't have money for, that guess what? A bunch of ballots were put in the back room, never counted. They were discovered weeks later.
Well, again, in terms of cleaning up the American electoral system, you've written about vote fraud a great deal, and long before President Trump was on the scene to become obsessed with the subject.
Inaccurate.
Right. And do you think that there is any doubt that the right winner was inaugurated as president? I don't mean in terms of his competence or his suitability. What I mean in terms of that he got the most votes in enough states to win the Electoral College?
The answer is probably never know for sure, because the chaos was sufficient that there does leave an element of doubt. You certainly couldn't prove it. And the real indictment, I think, that I make of Donald Trump's campaign is they didn't exercise their legal rights and their legal precautions and raise the warning flag before the election. They basically fell down on the job. Jared Kushner, who was effectively Donald Trump's campaign manager, is his son-in-law. He was warned about all of this before the election, well before the election, and he did nothing about it. So the point that I make in the book that Hans and I, Tchaikovsky and I wrote, Our Broken Elections, is don't wait until the election to complain about any irregularities. By that time, it's too late. You can't build a case, even if it's a strong one, in the time that it takes between the votes being cast on election day and when the Electoral College meets to decide who the next president is. You have to prevent the election irregularities. You don't chase them after the fact. That's why these audits and other things, frankly, are of a limited use, because when you have a ballot that comes in the mail and somebody looks at it, and let's say they don't verify the signature properly, so maybe the ballot wasn't valid, but they tear off the half of the ballot that has the voter's information on it, they put it to one side, the actual ballot goes in with all the other ballots, you can never back and reconstruct that ballot and prove that this individual ballot was invalid because it's tied to this non-existent voter.
Last question. Is there any case to be made that the electoral reforms that were made across the country in many states will have a disproportionately negative impact on black voters?
Well, voter ID is the most important of them, and we've seen over and over again that voter ID laws and academic studies have confirmed this don't reduce voter turnout, and that's because of three reasons. One, they act as a deterrent to anyone trying to vote improperly because they have to construct an identity and an ID either for a mail-in ballot or for voting in person. Two, almost everyone actually has an ID already. There's almost no one who doesn't because you can't do anything in life today without having an ID. And three, it is shown conclusively that minorities are energized and they're politically engaged and they're completely competent. They're not children who have to be led by the hand to vote. They know what they want and they find a way to come out and vote.
And again, this perspective certainly couldn't be more timely than it is. The new book by John Fund of National Review, Our Broken Elections, How the Left Changed the Way You Vote. Let us hope for a more clean, efficient, honest, and trouble-free elections. John, if you were thinking about one state that might be problematic in terms of its election procedures, which is the biggest state to worry about?
Well, the Heritage Foundation, where my co-author works, has just issued an election integrity index grading every state. California gets Fs across the board. They allow ballot harvesting. They send out ballots to everyone. It's the wild, wild west out there.
Well, California, here we come. Because elections tend not to be close in California right now, maybe people pay less attention than they should to the Golden State. We'll be right back on the Medved Show.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. That's 1-800-955-1776.
And on the Michael Medved Show, big headline from Gallup, the headline, U.S. political party preferences shifted greatly during 2021, the year just passed. And which way did they shift? They shifted in the first year of the Biden administration away from the Democratic Party and the Biden administration and toward the Republicans. Why? We will get to that in just a moment. Let me go first to Michael in Everett, Washington. Michael, you're on the Medved Show.
Hi, Michael. Nice to say hi to you. I first want to apologize to you. On January 6th last year, I yelled at you at the top of my lungs. I apologize. I wish I hadn't done that. You didn't deserve that. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. I actually had forgotten all about that.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I'm a daily listener. I'm a Medvedaholic. I love your show.
Thank you.
Sometimes I do feel frustrated, though, because I don't see things as you see them. I'll try to keep this short. You know, here's why one of the reasons why I believe the election of 2020 was stolen. I was listening to General McInerney. He was third in charge in the Air Force. He oversaw, along with one other man, the largest nuclear contingency in Europe and the world. You know, he's a he's a patriot. And I heard him on November 2nd, and he said, guys, this is what's going to happen tomorrow. Trump's going to be doing great, and in all of the swing states, the voting's going to stop in the evening, and you're going to wake up, and Biden's going to be your false president. He said that. I listened to it on November 2nd. He also said, now, this system they use is called Scorecard Hammer. Scorecard is a server. Hammer is an application. It was based in Maryland, and before they did the fraud, they moved it to three areas, China, Islamabad, and Pakistan, and that's where they employed the hacking that stole the election. And I'll close with this, Michael. I want you to know something about General McInerney. He's a cyber professional. He's a founder of his own cyber company. In his own words, I do this day in and day out.
Okay, I don't really know about General McInerney, but let me ask you a question, just taking everything that you're saying as gospel here for a moment. Given the fact that he was so certain that this level of cheating, this level of reprogramming or election theft was about to happen, that means that Trump and his inner circle must have known about it too, right?
Great question. Here's what happened there. He found out this has happened in the past, and he has proof it happened. That's one of the reasons why.
Let me back you up for a moment. Trump did talk about it. He said that they're going to steal the election. The election is going to be rigged. He said that many times. He was heavily criticized for it. But the question was, he was president of the United States. He had a Justice Department. He had an Attorney General, Bill Barr. He had vast resources, as a president does. If he knew that this plan was underway to steal the swing states, why didn't he take action?
Well, what happened, Michael, is McInerney talks about this. In terms of what happened in terms of the general election in 2020, he did his very best to get it forward to Trump, I mean passionately, but he didn't get to it. It didn't get to him in time. That's what happened. And in terms of really quickly about the past, 2016, they tried to employ it, and it failed. And that, do you remember when Hillary was all right, she had her party? She was so sure because of that. And what happened is McInerney said, because of God's grace and they did not have a backup, he said, you know what, it failed. And that's why their true winner was Trump. Now, the only other thing I'll say, Michael, I want to encourage you to consider something. Go to Frank's speech and just look at the packet captures that Lindell has captured. It shows all, it's amazing. It shows all the corruption by the letter.
Do you believe that this was actually a close vote? Or do you believe, as President Trump and Mike Lindell believe, that he won by a landslide?
Michael, when I look at McInerney and I look at Lindell's packet captures, which are, by the way, he spent millions to make sure.
Okay, do you know that the same General McInerney had said that he thought there were widespread and legitimate concerns that the president, meaning Barack Obama, is constitutionally ineligible to hold office?
You're saying McInerney said that?
Yeah. And he also attacked John McCain. He called him Songbird John. And this has been, it's something that embittered Senator McCain's life, frankly. The claim that he had betrayed his country when he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam, when actually he had refused the opportunity of release if they were going to just release him because he was the son of the CNO, of the Chief of Naval Operations. I mean, we're obviously talking about somebody who has out-of-the-mainstream views. And by the way, the thing about Obama being ineligible to hold office, about him being born anywhere other than Hawaii, is, I mean, you do accept that that's extraordinarily bogus, right?
Michael, would you consider just looking at Lindell's packet captures?
I've looked at Mike Lindell's material, and it is incredibly unpersuasive. because do you think that there were, do you think these machines, voting machines, were basically owned by the Dominion and the Votematic, or that they were owned and operated from Venezuela and Cuba and China?
Not sure about that, but what I am sure
sure about that. You know why I'm sure? Because they're suing, right? They're suing the people who suggest that, the voting machine makers. And when you sue on something, the truth is an absolute defense, and you're also exposing yourself to malicious prosecution and all sorts of other things. It's one of those things. We had a close election, very close election in 2000, and George W. Bush won just barely by 500 some odd votes. But the idea that, and by the way, it was a close election in 2016, much closer than last time. And why, if the Democrats were so easily able to steal an election, do you think they tried to steal that one?
You mean 2016 or 2000?
2016 or 2000.
Michael, you know, here's what McInerney said. They tried. They tried to steal it in 2016. And they did not have a backup, and it failed. And that's why Trump won. That's what McInerney said.
You know, okay, well, I'm glad you have so much faith in this individual, McInerney, who apparently later called on President Trump to declare a national emergency, use the Insurrection Act, declare martial law, suspend habeas corpus, set up military tribunals, and suspend the Electoral College, the vote for president and vice president, on December 14th, and the presidential inauguration should also be suspended on January 20th. He claimed the election was being stolen from Trump and treasonous parties should be arrested and charged, and a full investigation must be done by President Trump. Are you glad that President Trump didn't follow that advice?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I look at what happened, and cyber interference is a declaration of war, I feel like I wish more trouble. You often mention Bill Barr. How much time, Michael, did Bill Barr have to investigate? What, a few weeks before he left in January of 2021?
That's he left precisely because he did not believe the charges that the election was in doubt. And the difficulty you have over here, aside from everything else, do you think that it's all corrupt courts, including the Trump judges who presided over them, people Trump had appointed, who basically threw all of the court cases, I believe there were 63 of them, all of the court cases that were brought by Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and Lynn Wood and the rest of those folks. It's one of those things. And finally, let me ask you this, and you think about this for a minute, okay? Do you think if Trump runs again for president, and he gives every indication that he wants to, that he will be helped by going back and trying to question the 2020 election? Because if nothing else, aside from the preponderance of evidence, the court cases, the examinations, the investigations, it's such a political loser. And you got to see that in this greatest nation on God's green earth.